Imagine waking up one day to realize that your entire identity revolves around someone else's problems. Your thoughts, emotions, and actions are all reactions to another person's behavior. This is the reality for millions of people trapped in codependency, a pattern so common yet so devastating that Melody Beattie's groundbreaking work, Codependent No More, has sold over 8 million copies since its publication in 1986. Initially written on one of the first home computers and delivered to her publisher on Valentine's Day, this revolutionary book has become the Bible of self-care for those whose lives have been affected by someone else's addiction, mental illness, or dysfunctional behavior. Oprah Winfrey has repeatedly praised the book's transformative power, while countless celebrities, from Robert Downey Jr. to Elizabeth Taylor, have cited its principles in their own recovery journeys. What makes this work so enduring? Perhaps it's Beattie's raw honesty about her own struggles, from growing up with a volatile mother who told her she should have been aborted, to her marriage to an alcoholic husband who hid vodka bottles in the toilet tank. Codependency remains one of the most elusive yet pervasive conditions affecting relationships today. While chemical dependency has clear definitions and symptoms, codependency exists in a gray area, recognizable by its effects, but difficult to precisely define. In treatment centers across Minnesota in the late 1970s, professionals began using the term to describe the spouses and family members of alcoholics who seemed to develop their own set of problematic behaviors and symptoms. These individuals weren't drinking, but they were suffering nonetheless. At its core, codependency is an emotional and behavioral condition that affects an individual's ability to have healthy, mutually satisfying relationships. Robert Subby describes it as an emotional, psychological, and behavioral condition that develops as a result of an individual's prolonged exposure to and practice of a set of oppressive rules. Rules which prevent the open expression of feeling as well as the direct discussion of personal and interpersonal problems. Ernie Larson offers another perspective, defining codependency as those self-defeating learned behaviors or character defects that result in a diminished capacity to initiate or to participate in loving relationships. For many codependents themselves, the definition is simpler and more visceral. It's when I've lost myself in someone else's problems. It's knowing a relationship will end painfully, but staying anyway. It's being surrounded by chaos and thinking it's normal. The history of recognizing codependency stretches back to the 1940s when spouses of alcoholics formed Al-Anon groups, though the term itself wasn't coined until decades later. Initially focused on those affected by chemical dependency, professionals gradually recognized similar patterns in people connected to individuals with various compulsive disorders, mental illnesses, and chronic physical conditions. The common thread was clear. These were individuals whose sense of self had become entangled with someone else's problems. After years of working with codependents, Beattie distilled the essence of codependency into a powerful definition. A codependent person is one who has let another person's behavior affect him or her and who is obsessed with controlling that person's behavior. This seemingly simple statement captures the twin prisons of codependency, being controlled by others' actions while simultaneously attempting to control them. When Beattie first encountered codependents, she didn't understand them. They seemed hostile, controlling, and constantly in crisis. Years later, as a recovering addict working as a counselor, she was assigned to organize support groups for the wives of addicts. What she witnessed was striking. People who felt responsible for everyone but themselves, who gave until they were empty, who knew everything about others but nothing about themselves. The characteristics of codependents aren't character flaws, but learned survival mechanisms. They're adaptive behaviors that once served a purpose but have become self-destructive. Understanding these patterns is the first step toward changing them. Caretaking sits at the heart of codependent behavior. Codependents feel responsible for others' feelings, thoughts, actions, choices, needs, well-being, and destiny. They anticipate others' needs, feel anxiety when others have problems, and feel compelled to help even when not asked. They say yes when they mean no, do more than their fair share, and neglect their own needs while meeting everyone else's. The bitter irony? Despite all this giving, they often feel victimized, unappreciated, and used. This caretaking connects directly to their profound sense of low self-worth. Many codependents come from troubled families, though they may deny this, and blame themselves for everything. They reject compliments while clinging to criticism, fear rejection, and take everything personally. Perfection is their standard, and falling short brings waves of guilt and shame. They don't believe they deserve happiness, so they settle for being needed rather than loved. Other hallmark characteristics include repression of thoughts and feelings, obsessive worry about problems and people, and an overwhelming need to control situations and individuals. Having lived through chaos, codependents fear letting events unfold naturally. They believe they know best how things should happen and try to control through manipulation, helplessness, guilt, coercion, threats, advice giving, or domination. Denial keeps the codependent system functioning. Codependents ignore problems or pretend they aren't serious, stay busy to avoid thinking about issues, and become confused, depressed, or physically ill as problems worsen. Many develop compulsive behaviors like workaholism, overspending, gambling, or overeating to cope with their unacknowledged pain. Perhaps most devastating is the codependent's approach to relationships. Seeking happiness externally, they attach to people they believe will provide fulfillment. Often lacking parental love, they desperately seek approval, frequently from people incapable of loving. They equate love with pain, tolerate abuse to maintain relationships, and worry constantly about abandonment. When relationships end, they quickly form new, equally dysfunctional ones. Communication becomes a strategic game rather than authentic expression. Codependents use indirect methods, blaming, threatening, coercing, or sighing to express needs. They carefully gauge words to achieve effects rather than speaking honestly, talk excessively about others while avoiding personal topics, and struggle with assertiveness. Many claim everything is their fault, while others insist nothing is. Lies become commonplace, to protect others, to protect themselves, or simply because truth feels too dangerous. As codependency progresses, symptoms worsen. Later stages manifest as lethargy, depression, complete withdrawal, neglect of responsibilities, hopelessness, suicidal thoughts, violence, serious illness, or addiction to alcohol and drugs. What began as caring for others becomes a prison that threatens to destroy the caregiver. For codependents, detachment represents both the most challenging and most liberating concept in recovery. It's the essential first step before any meaningful work on ourselves can begin. When we're attached to people and problems, we become hopelessly entangled, losing our ability to think, feel, and act independently. Attachment for codependents means becoming excessively worried about others, obsessing and controlling, reacting instead of acting authentically, and assuming caretaking roles that keep everyone stuck in dysfunction. This over-involvement creates perpetual chaos, depletes energy needed for our own lives, and ironically, doesn't solve the problems we're so concerned about. The obsessed person can think and talk about nothing else, trapped on an endless racetrack of compulsive thought, driven by the gut-twisting anxiety that fuels controlling behaviors. Contrary to common misconceptions, detachment isn't cold withdrawal, resigned acceptance, or severing relationships. Rather, it's releasing unhealthy entanglements with love. It means accepting that everyone is responsible for themselves, that we can't solve others' problems, and that worrying doesn't help. We keep our hands off others' responsibilities while tending to our own. We allow people to experience their own consequences and grow from them. Detachment involves living in the present moment, accepting reality as it is, and having faith in a higher order. The rewards are substantial: serenity, peace, healthier relationships, and the freedom to find real solutions without excessive guilt or responsibility toward others. We detach when our emotions are churning, when we can't stop obsessing, when we feel compelled to act, or when we're hanging by a thread. Though initially awkward, detachment becomes habitual through practice. Ideally, we detach with love, but detaching in anger is better than staying unhealthily attached. The focus must shift from controlling others to caring for ourselves. asking what we're feeling, what we think, and what we need to do for our own well-being. This process requires honesty about our situation, openness to new approaches, and willingness to try something different. How? With practice, detachment becomes not just a coping mechanism, but a pathway to genuine freedom. We control for countless reasons, because we believe we're helping, because we know best, because we're right, out of fear, or simply out of habit. Some control with tyrannical power, others undercover with sweetness, while some manipulate through weakness. Regardless of tactics, the goal remains the same: make others behave as we think they should and force life to unfold as we've planned. But we're fooling ourselves. Like Maria, who tried desperately to control her alcoholic husband's drinking by becoming his guard, we often discover that in attempting to control others, we become controlled ourselves. We forfeit our power and lose our identity in the process. Control is an illusion. We cannot control alcoholism, anyone's behaviors, emotions, thoughts, choices, or life itself. People ultimately do what they want, feel how they feel, and change only when they're ready. No amount of control affects permanent change in another person. The only person you can change is yourself. Detachment means surrendering the illusion of control and putting your hand back in your own pocket. It means making decisions to take care of yourself, not to control others. When you've done all you can, it's time to let go. Facing the fears about losing control is terrifying but necessary. What will happen if you stop managing everyone's life? What disasters might occur? These fears keep us locked in controlling behaviors, but the reality is that most of our fears never materialize. And even if problems do arise, they're rarely as catastrophic as we imagine. By gaining control of yourself and freeing others to be who they are, you set yourself free. This doesn't mean abandoning people you care about. It means loving them enough to let them live their own lives while you live yours. It means understanding that true love isn't control. It's freedom with connection. About a year into my recovery from codependency, I recognized a painful pattern in my relationships, but couldn't identify what I was doing wrong. When I asked my friend Scott what codependents repeatedly do that causes pain, he explained the Cartman drama triangle, where codependents cycle through roles of rescuer, persecutor, and victim. As codependents, we excel at being rescuers and enablers, the godparents to the entire world. We anticipate needs, fix problems, and fuss over others with "your problem is my problem" as our motto. Rescuing means taking responsibility for another person's thoughts, feelings, decisions, behaviors, problems, or destiny. This includes doing things we don't want to do, saying yes when we mean no, doing things for people they should do themselves, meeting needs without being asked, giving more than we receive, fixing others' feelings, thinking for them, speaking for them, suffering their consequences, and solving their problems. When we rescue others, we feel discomfort, urgency, guilt, anxiety, and responsibility for their problems. After rescuing, we inevitably move to persecution, becoming resentful that the victim isn't grateful enough or taking our advice. Finally, we shift to the victim corner, feeling used and unappreciated despite our efforts to help. This cycle can happen in seconds or over years, but it's a predictable script we follow. The drama triangle isn't about genuine acts of love and compassion. It's about taking responsibility for capable people who we incorrectly believe are incompetent. Two codependents in a relationship create particular havoc, especially when both want out but neither will say so. Many helping professionals become hostile after years of rescuing, eventually feeling victimized by the very people they tried to help. We rescue for many reasons. We are unaware of what we're doing, we believe we're helping, or we have confused ideas about what constitutes help. But at the core of most rescuing is low self-worth. Caretaking provides a temporary feeling of goodness and power. We don't feel lovable, so we settle for being needed. Some of us learned caretaking as children in dysfunctional families. Others were taught harmful beliefs like "don't be selfish" and "never say no." Some interpret religious teachings as mandates to caretake. Regardless of origin, rescuing breeds anger and turns both rescuer and rescued into victims. caretaking perverts religious messages about giving and helping. We give until we're doubled over in pain, when genuine kindness should come from high self-esteem. True giving means feeling good about ourselves, what we're doing, and who we're helping. We shouldn't do things others are capable of doing themselves. The distinction between helping and hurting is thin but crucial. Caretakers, martyrs, and people pleasers all sacrifice happiness unnecessarily, lie to please others, and neglect themselves. The most important step is recognizing when we're caretaking so we can stop, take responsibility for ourselves, and let others do the same. Many codependents struggle with a painful paradox, appearing independent while desperately needing others. Despite outward capability, we often feel like frightened children desperate for love and care. After experiencing abandonment, rejection, or neglect, we become convinced we're unlovable, yet still crave connection. This creates a dangerous dependency where others become the key to our happiness. While healthy relationships involve natural emotional connection, codependents often cross into harmful dependency. We become obsessed with others' approval and presence, believing all goodness resides in them rather than ourselves. This dependency creates a prison. Some escape constructively by developing undependence, a healthy balance between connection and autonomy. Others turn to destructive escapes like addiction or workaholism. Excessive neediness ultimately suffocates relationships. Many of us developed these patterns because someone important couldn't give us the love we needed as children. We may have been taught not to trust ourselves when our feelings were invalidated, or when confronting inconsistencies led to being called crazy. Loving someone with addiction can destroy even the healthiest person's emotional security. The good news, we aren't helpless. We can handle whatever life brings. We can live without any particular person. Becoming undependent is a process requiring us to finish childhood emotional business, nurture our inner child, stop seeking happiness in others, learn self-reliance, and strive for courageous vulnerability, feeling scared but moving forward anyway. Real strength comes from acknowledging weaknesses, not pretending to be strong. Like driving in fog where headlights only illuminate a few feet ahead, we can navigate life by taking one step at a time, trusting that as we move forward, the path will continue to reveal itself. This journey toward independence isn't about isolation, it's about wholeness. It means developing the capacity to stand on our own while still connecting deeply with others. It means understanding that relationships enhance our lives but don't define them. It means knowing we're complete on our own, yet open to the richness that connection brings. The surest way to make ourselves crazy is getting involved in other people's business, while the quickest path to sanity and happiness lies in tending to our own affairs. After detaching from others, we're left facing ourselves, which can be frightening when we've been so wrapped up in others that we've forgotten how to live our own lives. Many codependents blame their circumstances on others. You are the reason I am the way I am. After detaching and taking responsibility, we might wonder if others weren't a reason we hadn't been living our lives. Perhaps they were just our excuse. We may be in such emotional distress that we think we are nothing but our pain, but that's untrue. We are more than our problems and will be more than our problems. Life doesn't have to keep hurting if we begin to change. Exciting, interesting things await each of us. A worthwhile purpose beyond just taking care of others. Self-care means taking responsibility for our spiritual, emotional, physical, and financial well-being, for identifying and meeting our needs, for solving our problems, for our choices, for what we give and receive, for setting and achieving goals, for how much we enjoy life, for whom we love, for what we allow others to do to us. It means understanding that we matter. Our feelings can be trusted, our thinking is appropriate, and we deserve respect. Self-care isn't selfish. It's an attitude of mutual respect and responsible living. The fundamental idea is giving ourselves what we need by asking, "What do I need to do to take care of myself?" Then listening to our higher self and respecting what we hear. This might mean setting boundaries, saying no, pursuing interests we've long neglected, or simply resting when we're tired. It might mean seeking therapy, joining a support group, or developing a spiritual practice. Whatever form it takes, self-care represents a radical shift from other focus to self-focus. Most codependents wouldn't dream of treating others the way we treat ourselves. We suffer from penetrating low self-worth. We don't feel good about ourselves, don't like ourselves, and wouldn't consider loving ourselves. We dislike our appearance, think we're stupid and incompetent, believe our thoughts and feelings are wrong, and consider ourselves unimportant. We're convinced we're inferior to others, not uniquely different, but inappropriately different. We must stop torturing ourselves. We are okay. Our thoughts and feelings are appropriate. There is nothing fundamentally wrong with us. We're exactly as we are meant to be. Codependents are some of the most loving, generous people. We've just been tricked into doing things that hurt us. We aren't second-class citizens deserving secondhand lives. We're the same as those who appear beautiful, intelligent, or confident. They simply tell themselves positive messages and let themselves shine. We're fit for reality and appropriate for any situation. We need to practice radical self-love, be gentle, kind, and compassionate with ourselves. Stop the shoulds, guilt, and shame that serve no long-term purpose. Make decisions that enhance our self-esteem. As Nathaniel Branden writes, honoring the self means living authentically, refusing unearned guilt, and being in love with our own life and possibilities. Learning to live and love simultaneously is the core challenge for codependents. We must find balance, loving others without losing ourselves, meeting our deepest desires to love and be loved while knowing we're worthwhile. Recovery requires honesty, openness, and willingness to change. Balance becomes essential between self-care and caring for others, between solving problems and accepting unsolved ones, between letting go and asserting our worth. Many codependents feel overwhelmed about where to begin recovery. The solution follows the HOW formula from 12-step programs: honesty, openness, and willingness to try. Change begins with awareness and acceptance, followed by assertive action. Start with one behavior, practice it until comfortable, then move to the next. Recovery becomes natural when we keep moving, even if we occasionally step backward. Some relationships may need to end if they're destructive. Others might be repaired with patience, as love and trust heal in their own time. Being single is perfectly acceptable. Use solitude to grow and develop so future relationships enhance an already full life rather than filling an emptiness. Move slowly, making self-care decisions daily. Occasional relapses into codependent thinking are normal. Don't be ashamed when old feelings resurface. Talk to trusted friends, be patient with yourself, and continue self-care practices. Recovery is about finding and maintaining balance in all areas of life. The journey to wholeness includes learning to feel our feelings rather than repressing them. Feelings serve as vital indicators of our well-being. When we're happy and content, all is well. When uncomfortable emotions arise, they signal problems requiring attention. Our emotions motivate action. Anger pushes us to solve problems. Fear helps us avoid danger, and pain warns us to stay away from harmful situations. Yet emotions have a darker side. They can hurt intensely, making us feel consumed by pain. We can become trapped in fear, anger can fester into resentment, and sadness can morph into depression. Repressing these feelings, however, creates even worse outcomes: physical ailments, addiction, compulsive behaviors, and emotional numbness. The solution isn't to let emotions control us, but to mindfully experience them. We must acknowledge feelings without judgment, allowing emotional energy to pass through our bodies. After feeling our emotions, we examine the thoughts connected to them and decide on appropriate responses aligned with our moral code and self-care. For many codependents, anger deserves special attention. We often live with intense fear around anger, both ours and others. We fear people will leave if anger enters the picture, believe others make us angry, feel controlled by others' anger, and repress our feelings only to have them emerge as depression, illness, hostility, or violent outbursts. Recovery also means reclaiming our thinking ability. Many codependents don't trust their own minds, becoming paralyzed by even small decisions. Factors that cloud thinking include believing lies, denial, chaos, stress, low self-worth, and repressed emotions. Parents or partners may have undermined our confidence by making decisions for us, criticizing our choices, or calling us stupid. Setting intentions and goals provides direction, purpose, and energy. Writing down intentions sets powerful forces in motion, making us aware of what we need to do while attracting opportunities. Goals transform problems into solutions, generate interest in life, and create the energy needed to accomplish what matters to us. Though we may occasionally lose balance and fall back into old patterns, persistence in self-care will restore us. We can learn to both live fully and love healthily at the same time. The journey isn't about reaching perfection. It's about progress, self-compassion, and growing capacity for authentic connection with ourselves and others.